Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number two. Hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. I'm all in, man.
Just going ahead and using it.
Charlene called me earlier, told me she's going to pick up some meatloaf, and I can't get rid of it now.
Nice.
It's like, it's Meatloaf Monday as far as I'm concerned.
I like it. It rolls off the tongue.
I'm digging it, man. It also makes me hungry. Hey, listen, by the way, we're going to keep on moving with this topic of communism rising. So Kamala Harris has announced her economic development plan, her plan for the economy, the idea of combating rising inflation by blaming corporations, and just on and on and on. Anyway, the bottom line is this. Much of what she is aligning herself with are principles that are anti-free market. Well, there's an organization out there that I know and love that I used to be a part of called the Alabama Policy Institute that stands in part for free markets. They've been doing conservative policy now for over three decades here in the state of Alabama. And they are part of a larger umbrella of the state policy networks. And Justin Bogie is a fiscal analyst with the Alabama Policy Institute. Justin's got a great resume for it, too. He knows where all the bones are buried down in Montgomery because he spent time in the legislative fiscal office. He went to the Heritage Foundation. He spent time on Capitol Hill, and he's now a fiscal analyst with API, and he's on the phone as we speak. Justin Bogie, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Phil. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. I think it's been too long. We need to figure out why it's been so long.
I know.
It's on my end, not yours.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're in this weird situation where she's actually come out and said pretty much, here's my plan. And yet I look at it and go, that's a plan? But you're a fiscal guy. Break it down for us. What do you see and not see?
Yeah. And I'd love to have more details, but just from what we heard last week, you know, there's a lot of alarming things there. You're getting into things like, you know, price fixing, telling corporations how much they can charge for goods and services. You're getting into, you know, housing handouts, so to speak, giving people large credits for housing. It very much sounds like, just from the little bit that we've heard so far, that they're looking at corporate income tax increases are likely on the agenda if she's elected.
Oh, wow.
Individual income tax increases for people who are making over $400,000. So really, in a lot of ways, a redistribution of wealth. And like you said in the intro, just trying to restrict the free market and really set a lot more controls over businesses, large corporations in America, who are really the drivers of the economy, who are the drivers of jobs. And not to mention, with all these proposals, we haven't heard anything about how we're going to pay for it, you know, as we cross the $35 trillion threshold in debt today.
Today we did? Just today?
I believe it was today or over the weekend, but very recently we were at 35.1 trillion now in gross national debt, and you know, just any number of these proposals could greatly increase that number over the next 10 years. So we're I would say it's the wrong track to be going down.
Yeah, and I look at it too. There's zero ownership of the fact that she's complaining about an economy she helped create. I mean, this has been a, you know, economics 101 is what I said earlier. This has been a violation of economics 101. Her administration has flooded the market with money and then overregulated that which existed to produce goods and services to the point that services and goods cost more and have fewer of them on the shelf. And then, oh, by the way, there's more people, though, with money in their pocket because it was free from the government and they want to go buy stuff they can't buy. It's just, it's why inflation is what it is.
Right. And we're not in a situation where we can really blame, you know, COVID for this anymore. It's been 4 years. She's been there for the last three and a half of those. And really, it's a continuation of a lot of the Biden policies but really an expansion of those policies, kind of going even further than he was willing to go. So, I think you're absolutely right. And on, you know, something like this price control thing, you know, basically telling companies that they can't price gouge and you know, even defining price gouging is hard to do. But, you know, really the reason for prices increasing so much in the last few years is a lack of raw material supplies, that kind of thing, increases in labor costs. It has little to nothing to do with companies just going out there and gouging prices as much as they can. So, you know, that's not going to fix those problems. All it's going to do is when there is a scarcity of goods, make those companies less likely to produce more of them because they don't have any incentive to.
Yeah, that's the thing is when in the free market, when you build a better mousetrap, people flood to you and you succeed because you stayed ahead of the market. But if there's a redistribution, if there's an evening of the playing field because you don't want anyone to have any opportunity to excel, then no one excels. And at the same time, everybody loses. That's the thing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. There's no incentive for companies to try to be innovative or come out or produce more or hire more people if there's no incentive for them to do that. If there's not a increased profit margin, those types of things. So, you know, when you start talking about those kinds of things, it's scary. And, you know, on the housing side, you know, she's proposing this $25,000 credit yes. for housing. But then also on the corporate side, you know, or on the construction side, she's talking about tax incentives to get developers, construction companies to build more. And, you know, in theory, I don't have as much of a problem with the encouraging or allowing businesses to save money so they can invest more, they can hire more people, they can ramp up production. But when you're dictating what types of properties they can build and putting restrictions in place in order to get that credit, it's again picking winners and losers and really trying to dictate the market.
It is. You know, and I look at this housing, this building 3 million houses she says she's going to build, and I can't help but wonder, okay, how's that going to mesh with the Green New Steel they keep going at where everything's got to have to, you know, are they going to mandate that it's going to have to be built with all kinds of new green and environmental regulatory burdens that are going to drive the cost of it up? I mean, do we even have any idea? I mean, where or how they're going to place or who's going to get these 3 million houses? I mean, it's just unbelievable to me.
I haven't seen any specifics on it, but you know, you bring up a good point. Obviously, EPA restrictions, those types of regulations have been big in the Biden administration. It sounds like she would take those kinds of things further. So, you know, even to, in theory, get this tax credit, if you're a construction company, you may have to jump through so many hoops and spend so much more money on green materials and that types of those types of things that it could really limit your incentive again to want to do those things. And then you also have to kind of question this $25,000 first-time homeowner credit
in
that if a construction company knows you're getting a credit, is that really going to keep prices down? Is that, you know, or are they just going to say, well, you're getting a free handout from the federal government, basically, so you can afford to spend more money on the house. Is that going to do anything to really lower prices? And my guess is no.
No. In fact, what it's going to do is going to raise the prices by at least $25,000 is what it's going to do.
Exactly. That's the way that works.
Well, so let me ask you this. In your experience and in the numbers of years you've been analyzing these kind of things, is there anything about what she's proposed that the executive branch can even do unilaterally on its own? I don't know that she can pass an executive order that says fixing prices or building houses or whatever. I mean, I would imagine Congress has to get involved.
Right. If it comes down to actually spending any money on it, then Congress is you know, almost always going to have to get involved with that. I don't know about the price fixing. That's a more interesting one because, you know, theoretically, it's not the federal government spending any additional money. I'm sure there'd be a regulatory burden or that kind of thing. But, you know, most of these other big ticket items, she's going to have buy-in from Congress, which, you know, given the current makeup and I don't think that that's likely, but, you know, what we really ought to be talking about is finding ways to reduce the tax burden, to encourage businesses to do a lot of these things on their own, to make them want to be more productive, to give them a reason to be. And, you know, one of my fears is when you start hearing about, you know, making the wealthiest Americans pay what they should be, their fair share, that kind of thing, is are we going to undo some of the good things that we did back in 2017, like lowering the corporate tax rate significantly? You know, I think things would have been a lot worse the last few years if some of those hadn't gone into place. And, you know, it sounds like to me she's already saying, if I get elected, I'm going to undo some of those things.
Yeah, and, you know, but I agree. And the other somewhat farcical thing, though, is she keeps talking about when I get elected, she's already the incumbent, basically.
Right.
I mean, she's in office right now. So if these were all great ideas, why don't you just go ahead and do them while you have the chance? I mean, but, you know, she didn't want to do that because she knows she can't.
Right, exactly. She hasn't had the ability to, and then so now we're going to, you know, make it sound like some great new thing that we should all jump on board. And it's interesting the way that they frame a lot of this stuff. You know, I think in general, a certain segment of the population likes to hear about, you know, cracking down on corporate greed and all of that kind of thing, but not really thinking through the broader consequences of what the specific policies do. So, you know, obviously she's doing this for votes, but if it were to actually happen, the negative impacts would be overwhelming.
They would. And you know, what's interesting is some of the articles I've got here in front of me in my resource stack is I'm pretty sure that most of what I would call serious Democrats also recognize that. I mean, they know it, and yet they're being stuck to. I guarantee you this was not a plan that was vetted by all the people who are then going to be asked on the talk shows, how do you feel about her plan? In the background, I think going, oh, crap. And they've got to deal with it now.
Now I have to go out here. Yeah, and I think you're right. Yeah, everything I saw yesterday on the Sunday shows was pretty tepid at best. But even beyond that, I mean, I think the question that anyone should be asking, Democrat, Republican, otherwise, is how much is this going to cost? Because, you know, just like the child care tax credit expansion alone, the estimates I've seen are over $1 trillion a year. You know, we're already running a deficit of about $2 trillion in 2024. So you're adding another $1 trillion onto that deficit every year in perpetuity. It's just alarming. And you know, I won't belabor it too much, but there's an interesting point. A child born today, Heritage Foundation estimates that they're already $82,000. Their share of the federal debt is already $82,000. Wow. If none of these things that we're talking about right now happened, they'd be about $282,000 a share of the federal debt by the time they're 35. So we have a real problem on the spending side as well that nobody's seems really serious about confronting.
No, and I think even Republicans need to get their hands on spending. I mean, I really do. I think right. we've got to rein that in because we're spending ourselves into oblivion right now. But in the meantime, I don't think that anything I heard from the new Kamalanomics adds up to anything except for socialism, maybe even communism, all the way.
Yeah, I think you're right, absolutely right. I mean, again, if you're talking about price fixing and things like that, these concepts that were popular or we heard more about 40, 50 years ago, you know, I don't know how you can veil that as some new great policy that you've just suddenly come up with that's going to fix everything, because we know from experience that it's not.
Well, Justin Bogey, fiscal analyst with the Alabama Policy Institute, man, I appreciate your time, and we may call you back because we're not done here.
Sounds great. Thank you very much for having me.
All right. See you, Justin. All right, we got to take a break right now. I ran long on that because I knew he'd be able to unpack it some more. But when we come back from that, I got a few more of this to tie up, and then I'll jump on your text messages because a bunch of y'all from all over North Alabama and beyond have comments on this. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.